Once again, welcome to all of you to Introduction to Corporate Communication. This is our fifth lecture, and next time it's going to be the last lecture for you guys. But today, it's our great pleasure to have another great visitor in this class, CEO of whom? Ilja Aalto. And Ilja is actually our alumni. I can't remember the exact year you actually graduated from our discipline, but you can tell that to the audience once you start your presentation. But Ilja is going to tell you more about his life, especially after graduation and after getting a degree from the business school and from corporate communication. So, it's always nice to hear where our alumni work and how their career has been progressed since they graduated. So without any further ado, Ilja, you can start your presentation. We can check that your microphone will work. And I think after that, stage is yours.
Okay, thank you. Can you hear me behind? Thumbs up, thumbs up, down. Yes, no. Thumbs up. Nice. Perfect. Thank you, Matthias, and thanks all to you for being here today. Nice to meet you. As told, my name is Ilja Aalto, and after quite some time, I managed to graduate from corporate communications. I think 2 years ago, it took me, I'm not sure, 8 or 9 years, so quite not in the schedule, but but nonetheless, finally, I managed to finish it. And why it took so long time, I'm going to probably tell a bit about my own story and some choices I've made and what they meant in my life, and they might also be part of the reason why the studies took so long. It's been quite a while since I've been presenting in English, so I'm sorry if I have to look for some words at some point, but I think we'll manage. Briefly about today's agenda, what I'm here to tell you about, I'm going to tell a bit about my own story, because I think it gives kind of the idea what communications is really about, because I haven't been doing a single day the kind of typical job that you graduate to, or that you, like the typical career path that you work as a marketing manager or communications manager, career paths like those, and I haven't been working a single day in that kind of role. But nonetheless, my work has been maybe 95% nothing else but communications in its different forms. And I think that might give some interesting ideas about what are the actual future work-life skills, current work-life skills, and that how you can develop different skill set and use it in a variety of roles. So it doesn't always have to be that you study marketing and you become a marketing people. You study communications, you become communications people, and so on. You have a lot more options if you are just keep your eyes open. I've been sitting in that very same auditorium quite a bit, and I've seen quite a few guest lectures, and I've seen quite a few university lectures in general, and I always criticized when I was a student myself that they never say anything. It's always the academic bullshit and stuff like that, and it's too far away from the like real life and stuff, what's actually going on and what concrete skills you need. So I'm trying to give some ideas, give some thoughts that I hoped that I would have known or hoped that I would have heard at the time when I was sitting at your place. And I'm also going to give some ideas what I think personally are really important skills in work life right now and possibly in the future. And then to wrap up, I'm going to give my idea what I think communications is really all about. I have quite a bit of material. I have some I'm going to hassle a bit, so I'm going to have like the kind of red line might not be so obvious at all points, and I'm sorry for that, but I try to keep it coherent. you're able to ask me questions at any point, please just raise your hand or shout over me. You can also ask in Finnish, and I can translate the question to everyone else, so that's totally fine. Jos tuntuu, että ei halua kysyä kysymystä englanniksi, mutta olisi joku kiva kysymys mielessä, niin saa ehdottomasti kysyä myös suomeksi. Mä voin sitten kääntää sen englanniksi ja vastata. What else? So what you're going to learn today, or what ideas you're going to get, I hope I'm able to give you kind of some seeds. I like to please take everything with a small grain of salt. I like to be a bit thought provoking because I think that way you probably might remember something and also take responsibility of your own learning. So if you don't understand something or you want to know more about something, please ask and take the responsibility yourselves also. We are all adults here. But yeah, I think that's about the agenda. We can get going. So I'm going to briefly talk about myself and my story, what I've been doing the past 10 years or so. It's actually, it's 10-year anniversary since I started studying communications in the University of Jyväskylä. We actually, I think the English name of the discipline, was it organizational communication and PR at that point? Yeah. So that's what I originally started studying. I had also been information system sciences for 1 year before that, and I've done all kinds of stuff, but then that was kind of my field of study. So I for the first 3 years we were in yhteisöviestintä, in OCPR, in a different part of the university, but then we changed and became part of the business school after 2 years. So I have my bachelor's degree from the Faculty of Humanities, and then the master's from the business school. I'm 30 years old for 2 days now. Actually, I turned into a new decade in my personal life on Sunday. A few other numbers about myself. I'm 189 centimeters tall. I live in Lutakko area, so 40-100 is my postal code, and it's basically been almost my whole life. So I'm born and raised in Jyväskylä. I've never really had a good reason to stay here, but haven't found a good enough reason to move out either. So here I am, and life's been good. 26 refers to my old number that I used to wear when I was playing floorball competitively. So I'm really into sports, and especially all kinds of ball games are close to my heart, and team sports as well. Then more about my professional career. The first logo you can see there is our beloved Imago RY, that used to be our student association for the discipline of OCPR. At that time, I was active member of the board. I was sports and culture representative, and then I was a vice chairman also for 1 year. After that, I think 2016, a lot of things started happening at once. I was asked to go to work as a sales rep to a newly found startup called kokemuksia.fi, and kind of by an accident, went there in a really short period of time. I was supposed to move Helsinki for the summer, but then there was a Yes event where the founder was speaking, and he was like, if you want to learn how to do sales, please come to talk. And I went to talk, and 2 weeks later I was there as a sales rep, so that kind of escalated quickly. About sales, I usually like to talk it about it quite a bit, because I think it's an important skill, and it's a lot undervalued skill in Finland. If you want to understand business, if you want to learn how companies work, how organizations work, it would be really beneficial to do some sales at some point, because it helps you understand where the money actually comes from, where all the payroll comes from, because it's not the financial people, it's not the CEO, it's not either the chairman of the board who pays your salary, it's the customer that pays everyone's salary. So doing sales at some point is really beneficial to kind of see where the money actually comes in. And also sales is nothing else but communications, basically. So, so it's not that scary either. But yeah, that's what I had heard about from my older colleagues, that they told that kind of sales is the sort of kuninkuuslaji is the word in Finnish, but in English, it's, I don't know if there is a good translation, but it's kind of a really highly valued skill in the business world, and that you should be able to sell at some point of your career. And that's what I had in my mind, and it ended up doing it for quite some time. Then I ended up being a part of the founder team of an event called Spotlight. I heard that nowadays it's called Spark, and it actually, I think, was a few weeks ago. I hope some of you were there. So we basically founded a new event for students that want to develop themselves and learn some new things, and have some exciting speakers there in Paviljonki. And well, from Spotlight, a logical next step was to go to YES. So Jyväskylä Entrepreneurship Society has been playing a big role in my history, in my career. That was I was the chair of the board for 2017, and we basically had 50 events and 5,000 people and all kinds of stuff. And that's also the time when I really got to know a lot of people around Jyväskylä area and like the entrepreneurial people here. They're really nice, and they really want to help young guys with no skills but a lot of attitude, and that's kind of how everything has been possible for me. So I highly recommend getting into like all kind of student associations, what you have, Pörssi and ESN and YES and all kinds of organizations. So I highly recommend getting or being part of those activities, because they are also places where you can actually do things. As I said before, university is sometimes a bit far from the like everyday life and the normal work life, and I have many friends who have graduated as masters, and then they are looking for their first real job, and then they don't know what they are actually capable of, because they feel like, okay, well, I did all the courses, I did really well there, but I don't know if what I actually can do, because I know nothing, or I know a lot of stuff, but I can't do anything. And that's a really common syndrome. So I think it actually, if you are part of, or it can be something else than the student and subject organizations, you can have like any kind of voluntary stuff or any kind of, but be active and be sure to do also things, because that's, it gives a good counterpart, and also you are able to reflect your studies in a way different way if you're actually part of some organization or some team, and then you're studying, for example, leadership, and you are either in a leadership position or someone else is leading you at the same time. It gives you a lot more surface to reflect on and to think about all the theories and so on. Then I was part of an organization called Business Spring Festival. Not bullshit festival, as all of you probably thought at first. Most people do, no biggie. And that was also an entrepreneurial event in Jyväskylä area for a couple of years. And then in 2017, November, things escalated so that I founded a company with a friend of mine called Northbound. And it was a company focusing on B2B sales, and we did that for 5 years. So our team grew up to 30 people, and we broke the magical 1 million euros of revenue annually barrier. And then 2 years ago, in 2022, we had a fusion, so we merged together with our parental company called FinChat, and nowadays we're called HUM, which comes from the word human communications. So what I do and what we do nowadays is that we believe that people deserve to get better communications, better contacts with organizations. And most, if you think about what different organizations you have interacted with in the past month or so, most of those interactions are either related to some kind of customer service situation or some kind of sales situations. And those are the contacts that we do for our clients. So we take care of their some of their sales interactions and some of their customer service interactions with their clients. And yeah, so that's what we do. Some of you may have seen our office. We are right across the street of the university library. So the old brick building across the street is next to Lounaispuisto, and next to Grill 21 is has those home flags. So we are there. That's our HQ. Whom as a company, I think we have about 60 employees at the moment. We also have some, why I say about 60, and I don't know the exact number because it kind of varies a bit since we have seasons going on. In the summer, we have more people than in the winter, and we're kind of in between seasons right now. And then we have quite a few people doing also, for example, customer service work for us, aside their studies and so on. So the exact number of employees varies a bit all the time. But yeah, that's pretty much my story. And well, now for the past 7 years, it's been basically focusing a lot on Northbound and whom. But before that, it was a lot of different things going on. And I was basically doing four things at the same time. So I was working at kokemuksia.fi. I was a chair of the YES, which was basically a full-time job at that time. Then we were having the Business Spring Festival, where I was also the main organizer, which was another full-time job. And then I was trying to do my bachelor's. And that was not a good combination, so I don't really recommend that at all. Almost burnt out. Barely was able to escape from it, and the summer came just in time to save me from that. But I'm thankful later on, because now I really got to know where my limits are. And so even though I wouldn't ever do it again, but I'm glad that I know where the limit goes. But it's really important to also, when you're a person that is really driven and has a lot of passion towards everything you do, you have to be really also careful to not burn out, because that passion is also a fuel that even though it gives a lot of energy, it still tires you quite a bit. Yeah, since then, the past 2 years working with whom after the merger, at the same time we had been having good growth both with Northbound and also with FinChat. Both companies were doing really well. We had really nice growth going on, but at the same time, when we had huge investments for the new brand and the new company, and we were launching new businesses and stuff like that, but then the market changed a lot. So you know what's happened with Putin decided to invade Ukraine and start the war, and everything was suddenly really hard to know anything about, like tomorrow, or make any plans for the future, because they could change overnight. And we also had to change our strategy really quickly, and last couple of years have been pretty rough, because our total revenue is about 3 million euros, and we have to cut our costs for 1 million euros in a year. So that's quite a bit, and we are in a business where most of our costs are people, so we had to, like, after we had been only hiring more and more people for five consecutive years and growing all the time, and then we had to stop it and we had to make business profitable, and that's also been some of the toughest times I've been through in my career. Also, now that the situation is a lot more stable already, and I'm able to look some of the things past, there are multiple things I would do differently, even though it was a really rough time. I learned a lot, but I would be willing to give a lot to be able to go through it again with the knowledge I have now, and maybe how this affects, or what the link is with today's topic, is that I think if we had been able to communicate things better in many different places or many different periods of time during everything that's been happening during the past couple of years. It would have been a lot better. So better communications would have made everything a lot easier. It wouldn't have saved us from all the negative stuff, but it would have been a lot better that way. But more about that a bit later. I'm taking a sip of water. A few tips for younger Ilya, so that the things I know now and everything I've gone through, what I would have wanted to know when I was starting my university studies or during the studies or what I would have hoped to know at that point. Maybe the first and probably the biggest idea, when I was running Yes and we had all those inspirational events and we were like, we're the place where people find out what they really want to do in their life and get really inspired about that. What's your thing that it would be really interesting to find your passion and what you want to go for. But since then, actually my dream was at some point to find what I really what's my passion or what's my kind of kutsumus is the Finnish word, but what's my like what's my purpose of living and what do I really want to do in my life? And I spent years thinking of that and just trying different things. And since then, at some point I realized that actually trying to find your own thing desperately is basically the same thing than trying to find happiness in your life. And that's a really poor life guide or piece of advice for life, because it's not an end goal. Happiness is not an end goal. It's a side product. When you're doing things that make you happy, you actually are happy. But if you're looking for happiness, you never get there. And I think it's kind of the same thing that when you're desperately looking for what's your thing, what's the thing you are thrilled about, there are some people who find it. It may be music, it may be art, it may be business, it may be basically anything, but I think that's a really, really, really small amount of people who are really like into something so much that they dedicate their whole life to that, and it's really clear to them that that's what they want to do. And I think that most of us won't ever find that kind of passion, and that's okay. You don't have to do. You don't have to be able to find it. It's more than okay. Being desperate about finding it may be really miserable, and that's something I wish I knew when I was younger a few years ago. It still doesn't mean that you shouldn't be passionate about what you're doing, and you shouldn't try your best, and you shouldn't give everything you have for whatever you are doing when you're doing it. But it might be okay that you never find anything that you would want to dedicate your whole life for. And that also means that you're able to try a lot of different things. I think most of you in this auditorium are maybe 5 to 10 years younger than me, and I think my people of my age will have in average 3 different careers. That's what the studies say. So I will probably have 3 different careers during my work life, and I think it's going to be at least the same for you, probably even more. So it's also kind of a nice thing to think that you're able to try different things. And also the only way to find what you like and what suits the best is to, well, trial and error. So try stuff and see if it's your thing. If it's not, then try something else and see. That's the only way to find out. And that's also the second tip, is to try new things, get involved to a lot of stuff. I did it a lot. So I had friends in basically all kinds of different faculties and disciplines in the university. So please get to know other people than people in business school. Get to know people who are studying humanities get to know people who are studying music, languages, get to know all the IT people, engineers, get to know also people from the University of Applied Sciences, try to be part of like all kinds of events that have people who come from different fields of study. I think that's something I can't emphasize enough. Too many students basically never go anywhere else than Kortepohja or whatever the area is they're living, then the university area, and then they all only attend the events of their very own subject organization where they are with the very same people every time. And well, that's nothing wrong in that. Go for it if that's what you aim for. But I would advise that you might get a lot more out of the whole study time if you kind of make yourself vulnerable or involved in a lot of different kinds of activities. And there are so many possibilities that you can do all kinds of spexy acts and different organizations, and you have beer tasting clubs, and there's anything. So I think that's something that really makes also the studying time a lot more fun. It makes it more unique, and it also gives you a lot of contacts all around, like from different kind of people. Not only the people you study every course with, but like from different fields of study, because they will also be the people you're going to work with the rest of your life. And so I think it's really beneficial to, it's really fun, but it's also good for your career that you're able to know and cooperate with a lot of different kind of people with different backgrounds. Then probably my biggest mistake was that I didn't feel that I had to rush anywhere, but I ended up working most of the time of my studies, and I ended up founding a company at the same time when I had just finished my bachelor's, and that's something I probably wouldn't do again. For example, I had an exchange coming in Canada or in the States, in Northern America, and I canceled that because I had kind of a once in a lifetime work situation going on to sign for, and I was like, okay, I can't go to exchange. I have to take this. This is a once in a lifetime chance. Of course, it wasn't. Like, there will always be new chances, and please enjoy the time of being a student, because I think it's probably one of the best times of your life. You're able and allowed to do a lot of things, but you don't have that many responsibilities yet. Don't rush for them, because you will have time to work. I don't know if any of us will ever get retired. So at least looking at the current trends and also the economical situation in this country, so you will have time to work for sure. So no need to rush. And then the last one is a bit more specific about like entrepreneurship. Is anyone thinking that it would be cool to be an entrepreneur at some point? Oh, that's nice. I would say almost half of you, because 10 years ago when I was there, I think the situation wasn't the same. So that's a good thing. But about entrepreneurship, I don't actually know if the word works in English or if you can say that it's not an absolute value itself. In Finnish, it would be yrittäjyys ei ole itseisarvo. So it's not something that... basically, entrepreneurship is the idea that you are able to send bills for some value that you do for someone, or that you sell some services or some products and then you are able to send them bills. That's pretty much what being an entrepreneur is, and it's not for everyone, but if it's something that you desire, I really recommend looking for the path, because it gives you a lot, and I'm going to dive into a bit deeper also into entrepreneurship in just right now, actually. So because half of you were interested in entrepreneurship, I'm going to give a few qualities, a few ideas what a potential startup founder needs, in my opinion. First of all, probably the most important thing is to be able to sustain uncertainty, because nothing is It's different thing than courage. A lot of people told us, I think I was just turned 23 years old when we founded the company, and a lot of people were like, you're so brave that you, and you're so courageous that you were able to found a company at that age. But I was like, okay, that's not like courage, or you don't have to be brave to do that, because I had nothing to lose. I didn't, like, my living expenses were really small at that point. I didn't have a family. I didn't have, like, if we went into bankrupt in 1 year, what does it, who cares? Like, that, at least I would probably learn something if everything goes really poorly. But what you need to have is to be able to sustain uncertainty, because there is, like, so many things that change all the time, and you have to be able to operate in a really uncertain environment. Also, you should have passion for what you're doing, because you, especially in the beginning, you are not going to get paid really well for especially if you compare it to the amount of the work that you have to do. And you also have to have passion for learning, because that's the only way to be able to grow and be able to sustain in the business. And when you're a startup, you don't have the resources that bigger companies have, but you have the flexibility and you can be really fast in your movement. And that's what you need to have as a competitive edge also. And that's why you need to learn really quick. Then you also need to try to enjoy the role, because enjoy the speed, enjoy all the hassle. The only thing that doesn't change all the time is change itself. So if you enjoy the ride, it's a lot more fun, and you might be able to tolerate it a lot better. Then you have to sustain uncertainty, but also incompleteness, because basically the environment you are in is that there all the time something is not complete. Like, everything is kind of under hassle, and that's also, like, all these qualities are also the kind of qualities that you need to, that the first people you hire, your first recruitments need also to fulfill all these qualities. Because, and for example, one of my favorite job interview questions is still that, how do you sustain incompleteness? Do you get really anxious about if you have to work in an environment where things are not ready or might be incomplete around you? And how do you find it inspiring? Do you want to fix them? Do you want to develop them? Or do you find it anxious or demotivating? And that's really important to be able to sustain and find it more inspiring. And then, of course, humility. But that's different thing than fawning. So nöyrä pitää olla, mutta nöyristellä ei saa, would be the Finnish expression of that. So you need to be humble, but don't fawn. That's two different things. So be courageous and be brave, but be humble. And last but not least, in the previous slide I told that entrepreneurship is not an absolute, so it's not an absolute value. It's not itseis arvo. What it means basically is that you have to have a big enough problem to solve, or you have to have some value to add to someone. Because if you don't, then there is basically no reason for your company to exist, and that's something that's why I, when there are people who are like, oh, yeah, we want to be entrepreneurs, we want to found a company, that's something you must not skip. You have to think that what's the actual problem we are going to solve, what value do we add, and who do we add the value for. That's really, really important to go through. Then, based on that, what learnings have there been during the past 7 years of entrepreneurship and also leadership? I think it's really been an interesting journey in a way that most of the time, and I'm still, I think when I think the key personnel of our company, I think I'm the, in the executive board, I'm the youngest, and I've been the whole time. And if we think about all of our key personnel, I'm one of the youngest still. So I've been leading people who are older than me, have more experience than me, pretty much the whole 7 years. And it's not been so easy all the time, but it has taught me something. So here are a few pieces that I've learned. First is that you always have too much or too little resources. So it's always that you're paying, basically, that our resources are mostly just people. So we are paying too much salaries for our growth or our business, or then we are tiring people because we have too much work and too few people to do that for. About people, they are easily both the best and the worst thing. So they are the most rewarding, but they are also the most demanding and most challenging thing in running a company, because people, business is business, numbers are numbers, but people are, at least for me, always the thing that goes under the skin. And when you have to make some tough decisions that affect some people's lives, that's the thing when you lose your dreams and you lose your sleep, and that's really not fun. But if you don't do those decisions, then the circumstances or the consequences can affect a lot more people. So that's also, for me, I think the hardest thing is I really, really, really hate being mean to people. I really hate to give disappointments to anyone at any point. I like to be nice, and that's really important to me as a person, both in personal life and in professional life. But I've been working in a role where I've also paid the price for it many times, because I've wanted to be too nice. So if there's a place where I need to give a critique about something or give some constructive feedback to someone about something they have done, I find it really difficult. So I try to soften it up and give it kind of, you know, the hamburger model. So you give something nice, and then you say the dirty stuff, and then you give something nice after that also. And I've run into situation that the people I've given the feedback haven't actually gotten the feedback because they didn't understand the meat in between. So that's something that I have to learn a lot still, and I think many people have the same issue, and you have to just think about it, that being honest and being direct with the constructive feedback also is a gift to the other person, because if you think that you were in their position, you would like to know if something you did wasn't so good or wasn't good enough or there was something that could have been better. You'd like to know that, but if you don't, then that's not nice. Then the goals we tend to, or the aim points that we set up for ourselves, they usually happen or you're able to reach them, but almost never in the schedule that you had planned. And I think there is a saying that most of us really, really overthink about our capabilities within like a time period of 1 year, but really underestimate our capabilities when the time limit is 5 or 10 years. So that we think that we are able to do a lot of stuff in 1 year, but 1 year is really a short period of time actually, and then we don't give enough credit to ourselves about how much we can achieve in 5 or 10 years. So many times the thing that we were supposed to do this year actually happened next year or the year after that. So that's also, you need to be merciful. You need to understand that things just take time. Well, then I'm not going to dive too deep into that, but that's also where we have paid the bill. So profitability, oh, there's also a typo, I'm sorry about that. It should never be overlooked. It's something that things are a lot easier if you're able to stay profitable from the beginning at all times. And we really were looking for growth, and when that stopped, then suddenly we weren't profitable at all. and we had to cut costs a lot, and that sucks a lot more, and it's a lot harder to go that way. And then one thing about entrepreneurship is things go forward and develop a lot faster when a paying customer is involved. And I think you can, that's actually good advice to other contexts as well. So it doesn't have to be business, it doesn't have to be customer. But when someone is actually involved or invested in something in some way, it can be money, it can be time, it can be basically anything. But when it really matters to us that this thing is going to happen, it's much more likely going to happen, and it's going to happen much more quickly. So that's a good kind of point from there. Then I think for almost all of you, I hope that the box you see on the left side is something that you never have and you never will experience, or at least I hope so. But when we start to talk about the work life and where is it going and why is it going, I think the traditional kind of work life have been, it's reactive. Like you get a task, you react to that task and you get it done for your supervisor or your boss or your client. And that's the way it kind of goes, that someone orders a job task from you and you basically deliver that order. And that's not the way it works in modern work life. So you have to be proactive. So kind of seek for opportunities yourself. Think what you can do, where you can add value, what possibilities there are. The whole concept is changing from reactive to proactive. And it's really cliche, but it's really true in many places and many different contexts. Then traditionally, and of course still in some organizations, the high hierarchy is a thing, but more and more organizations have really flat organizations where there are not so clear leadership, not so clear manager roles, and that's more freedom, but that's also more responsibility. So in order to succeed in a modern flat organization where you're working most likely hybrid, you are doing some distance working and you are doing some work at the office, you have to be able to be responsible there and be able to also lead yourself and be the most important person that you have to lead is yourself. In that kind of situation. But even though some individual skills are really important in modern work life, it's still, I would say, that modern work life is more collaborative than, and it has been like, you know, you have that corner office and your own room where you work, door shut, that used to be the world, isn't the world anymore, but it's more like every project is done in different teams and with different colleagues, and that also means that you must be able to work with other people, because everything meaningful that happens is usually the product of collaboration. And then of course technology, it used to be a tool to get a certain job done, but nowadays it's basically enabled for all the work you do is on some platform or through some technology or using some different. And I think with the rise of concepts like artificial intelligence and stuff like that, it's going to be even more that technology is always there. It's I don't think it's going to steal our jobs, but I think it's going to affect them quite a bit, and it's going to be involved in and it's already during the past 2 years, I think ChatGPT, for example, has has made a huge difference in many work-life environments. Speaking of artificial intelligence, I want to give a few points about it, the era of artificial intelligence. Will AI take our jobs in the future? No, I don't think so. I think it will be... there are some certain, like if you are a graphics designer and you need to make some design photo for a blog post, I think that's something AI can do pretty well already. Or if you are... if you need to do some basic content to social media or some basic copywriting, I think that's something AI will affect a lot. But it's not going to take the job, but it's going to those people who are able to, who have the same skill set than you, but who are also able to implement and use AI with them, they will take your job. So who will, if not AI, who will? So humans won't lose their jobs to AI, but humans will lose their jobs to humans who are able to use AI, because it can accelerate the efficiency at some certain tasks so much. How to implement it? Where to start? Start using it. I think it's going to, because it's already developed during the past 2 years a lot, and it's already changed the work life a lot. And by the time, if you're now freshman students and you're going to be in the work life in like 4, maybe 5 years from now, it will be a different game. And I think you have really good edge there to be able to learn it and start using it on different everyday tasks. You can ask AI to do a gym program for you. You can use it for learning. You can use it for studying. You can use it basically for almost anything. And I really suggest that if you are not using it at least every week for something, just start playing it with around. I think the best way to learn new technologies is to actually play and be curious about what can I do with this and what possibilities does this give to me, and that's where you get the hang of it the most or the best. Also, the topic of the course and like communications is the key here is that what skills do you need to utilize AI? Well, basically you communicate to it. So you talk to AI or you write to AI, you prompt it with different kinds of things. So that's basically also communications. So you have to be able to communicate with humans, with different team members and such, and with different backgrounds. But I think it's a really good skill to be able to also communicate with AI, especially in the future. Then, going... with the role of communication in work life and more about the actual topic of the course with all those sidetracks and notes I just wanted to share with you. If you think about different career paths or roles, these have been the stuff I've been involved a lot. So I've done a lot of sales, I've done some marketing, not as a marketing manager, but like I, as a CEO, I've been responsible for all our sales and marketing. I've been running projects and all that kind of stuff. And I think those all are basically nothing but communications. So it's all of it. Like and speaking of what are the like best and most desired skills in the future in work life, and I think, well, first of all, being able to concentrate on something, that's really important. So I'm personally I'm really hooked to my smartphone. I haven't been able to. I'm now reading a physical book for the first time in I don't know how many years, but it's been more than 5 years since I last read a physical book. I listen a lot to audiobooks and podcasts and stuff like that. So I do study that way and listen to professional content that way. But I was able to, like, I got my first smartphone when I was already 18. So I was able to have my whole childhood without any social media or any smartphones and stuff like that. And I'm still, I've lost the game. Well, basically, you're fighting against the most intelligent people in the world who are using most of their days to get you more hooked to your phone and to all those platforms and try to make you spend as much time there as possible. So it's like it's a pretty hard fight for almost any of us because the opponent is really strong, and I don't think it's a shame to agree that we're not, most of us are not probably doing so well in that fight, but that's something to probably also put a lot at you to because in the future I think there will be, which is really sad thing, but people who are actually able to concentrate and work concentrate on something and pay the attention for longer periods of time, that will be number one skill. Which sounds really, really sad, but I really think that's the way. But then the other really important work-life skill, and I think in the era of hybrid work, in the era of AI, in the era of like all the changes, what has been happening, I think the role of communications is more important than it has ever been. Because no one gets anything done by themselves. You have to be able to communicate with your teammates face-to-face, via phone, via email, Slack, Teams, whatever you have. The media, the amount of mediums that you have to, or different communication channels is a lot higher than it has ever been. So you need to be able to communicate in all of those. And basically interacting with other people is a lot about communication. How do you... how do you see them? How do you react? How do you like change your communications based on that? You just see that they have probably, you have the first meeting in the morning and you see from their face that they haven't probably slept at all last night. How do you change your communications to be more probably empathetic in that situation or show the empathy? So show that you see how they are doing and how you can react to different environments. That's basic human skills, basic communication skills. But I think it's a lot harder when you don't see people face to face every day, when you have different channels going on, and even then it's in the communication. During my studies, we had two sayings, and the first one was that. That communication is fails every time except by an accident. So communication, it never goes as planned. Sometimes you by accident you get it as you meant it. But for example, when I'm speaking to our company, we have 60 employees. So I know that no matter how much I think about how I'm going to say certain things, I know, and no matter how clearly I articulate them, and no matter how much I give both the like verbal communication, and I also give it by text, and there will still be people who question about the message that I try to deliver, and that's because every one of us individually receives. The message that we are getting from our unique perspective, and that's why we. What is tulkita? Interpretate. yeah. So in each of us in a unique way. So it's really difficult for me as a communicator when I send a message either verbally or by text to be able to. Deliver the message that I wanted to deliver to all of all of the audience. It's the same thing about you. I think there are, I don't know, maybe 100, 150 of you present here today. And I think that all of you will have your own memory of this lecture, or you will be remembering different things, and you will be emphasizing different things. It may be something that's based on your life or your current situation, or something might be more relevant to you, and other things might not be relevant to you at all, what I've been talking, for example. So that's just how it works. But you need to, in order to succeed in working life, you need to understand it, and that's also why communication is just like you have to go over and over the same things again and again, because that's the only way to be able to communicate, at least when it comes to more complex stuff like the strategy of a company or something like that. But yeah, I've been working a lot with sales and marketing, then of course leadership and projects. And when I think that what those different roles and job descriptions and what does it really include, and what skills do I need, and it all comes down in the end towards that I have to be able to communicate really well. And if I'm able to communicate really well, I'm probably going to succeed in all of those tasks really well. And communications is a lot more than just like how good are you are at writing, or how good you are at talking. It's a lot about listening and being able to interact with whether it's people, whether it's AI, like no matter what the channel is and so on. But it's so much about understanding the dynamics that there are going on, and being able to work around them. And then there is another saying that we used to have during communication studies, is that in Finnish it goes that kaikki kusee aina viestintään. So basically, I don't know the exact translation, but all the, well, basically you can probably say that all the fuck-ups are because of poor communications. And that's what also says in the down of the slide, that that solving and especially avoiding the majority of problems that you will ever face in work life, but also in personal life, are because of, or would be, you would be able to avoid them if you were communicating better, and you are able to solve them by communicating well. So that's kind of how I see the role of communication in work life, and actually in life general. If you think about like difficult situations you've been into, or some negative stuff, or something hasn't gone well, and you have to start solving the problem that there is, and you rewind a bit, go a bit further back, that what has happened, and think that okay, at some point, if the communication would have been better, would this problem have been possible to avoid? Would we have been able to avoid this problem if some parties communicated better at some point? And I would say most of the time the answer is yes. Of course, there are sometimes something external that's happening that affects a lot and causes a crisis or so, that that's not avoidable. But in many cases we create the fires ourselves, and then we have to also shut them off. Yeah, that's about the communication stuff, and I also want to emphasize the thing that, and probably why I'm here today is just to give the perspective that I haven't been working as a marketing manager, I haven't been working as a communication manager, I haven't gone through the like typical career path that you probably would do when you're like studying corporate communications, but I'm probably, what I'm trying to say, and like all the stuff that I've been going through, is that the main point is that I think communication in its different forms is one of the best universal skills that you could ever have in work life in the future. And it gives you possibilities to do a huge variety of different kind of jobs or works or have multiple different kinds of career paths. And I can't imagine a career or a job that you wouldn't benefit from being an excellent communicator. So that's probably what I wanted to say and maybe wake up a bit on that topic. Briefly about whom, we are a company of people. We are really technology oriented, so we nurture and promote the use of technology in creating a better customer experience. However, we see that all the technology is in the best possible usage when it's combined with the human. We often try to increase our customer sales and customer satisfaction, and we do it by combining technology and human ability in an efficient way. We're a young and active community of experts and pioneers, and we aim that everyone can be their unique own persona in our workplace. We don't currently have any recruitments open, but we will be having in a couple of months. So if you're interested in a part-time job aside studies or working with us or would be interested to hear more, there still you can go to humpiste.fi/recru, where unfortunately we only offer Finnish positions because you need language for the work. And we have there, you can send us an open message or like avoin hakemus, and we will get in contact to you when we start the recruitments, probably in a couple of months. And also we have every year some summer jobs in the fields of customer service and sales. So if that's something you're keen to for next summer, you can already contact us and we'll keep you in mind when things go on. So that's something I also wanted to tell. At this point, that's the setups that I was planning. We are running to the end of those. There you can find me my contact details. Don't be scared to contact me via LinkedIn or send me a message if anything comes up or you want to discuss more about something and or so on. But then we were thinking with Matthias that we can have a kind of a Q&A session. So no one has raised their hand yet and or asked any questions. But if you have anything in your mind or there was something that you'd like to hear more about or discuss more about, I'm more than happy, and we should still have some time also, almost half an hour, I think so.
Yes, absolutely. And first of all, thank you, Ilya, for an interesting presentation. I actually have a list of questions for you, but before going into those, now is again a great chance for you guys to ask any questions from Ilya. And like Ilya said, you can also ask it in Finnish, and we then translate them. It's totally fine. Once again, every time we have any of our alumni, this is a great chance for you to kind of look into the career. And like I said, if you have any questions for Ilya, please raise your hand and make a question. Okay, there on the back, you can start.
So the question is that
Your typical day at work. Yes.
That's a tough one. it varies a lot. So I don't have that many typical days. But if I tell that what I'm in charge of at the moment, we have two different businesses that is run by two teams. So I'm responsible of sales operations for both of our businesses. So I have, I think, 6 people below me at the moment doing sales, and also then as part of the executive board, johtoryhmä. So I do sales myself. I try to have a few customer meetings every week myself. Then I go to with our salespeople to their meetings to kind of give them some backfire. Taustatuli, taustatuki. But backfire is it feels more negative word.
You just want to support them in some way.
Support fire would probably be better in that way. Yeah. And then I have all the, like, as a CEO, you have a lot of shitty paperwork to do and all the, like, management stuff and reporting and financial stuff, paying the bills and reporting financial numbers. And then we have a board, hallitus, for example, this week on Thursday. So yesterday evening I've been doing the materials for the board and telling them how we are doing and what we should discuss on Thursday. I'm responsible of the strategy, so basically I try to think that what we should be doing in the following years, so where should we aim and what should we go for. But yeah, I think it's probably a typical day would have like one sales meeting, my own, or then with one of our salespersons. Then I would probably have one or two internal meetings with different teams or different or then one-to-one meetings with the people who are under currently like directly below me. Or then I have some like management stuff to do, and then I try to have some time for thinking about what should we do in the future and where should we develop our business and where we are going at the moment, where our goals are and how we are doing compared to them. So basically it's people and computer are the things, and I work a lot on site, so I'm almost every day at the office. Of course, if I have a day that I'm just going to run Excel and do a budgeting for next year, then I'm probably doing it from home, because it's when I'm at the office, I like to be available and talk a lot. Also, I try to every day have casual conversations with our people and be around, like, the close to the coffee machine, because that's where we meet the people easiest nowadays. So be around there and ask how they're doing and kind of get the hang of it, how people are doing and if there is something that's causing trouble or so on. So trying to be available. Leadership is a service job.
I think we have somebody in the front row. There you go. Yes.
For the, it depends, of course. Oh, the question was that if he came to work to us, what would be his salary from the beginning, which is a really good question. It depends, of course, based on the role. In the sales side, we have more like provisio malli, which is
provisional salary. Correct.
But like for that. Based on your performance, so that if you're able to provide results, you can get paid really highly. But then if you are not, then you're not going. So we have those kinds of roles also, where it varies a lot based on the performance. But then on the customer service side, which is where we recruit most people, I think the hourly salary, we have a table for that, which it, of course, it depends if you are working days or days and evenings or weekends, and then you have those extras going on. But the base hourly rates, I think, go from around 12 euros and some cents. And upwards from there.
Excellent questions. Any other questions from the audience? There.
Yeah. Sorry, I didn't hear the end of. Yeah. What are they outsourcing? Why are they? Ah, yeah, sorry, didn't catch the key word there. There are a few reasons. Many of the running a good customer service in-house is really expensive. If you want to have like your customer service available from, let's say, if you have it only from like 8 a.m. to 4 p.m., then it's pretty easy because you can have like one person that is frontline and like online from in different channels from 8 to 4 p.m. That's easy. But if you want to be able to provide customer service from 8 a.m. to 10 p.m. or if you want to have weekends or so on, then it's actually because many organizations don't have so high volumes, especially in the evenings or weekends, that it's basically wasting resources. It's the same thing that what I told, that it's you always have too much resources or too few resources, and it's the same with in-house customer service, that you always have too many people there or too much resources, because the amount of customer service inquiries that you get, they are not like flat, and because they vary, and you always, basically almost all the time, you have too many people responding to them or too few people responding to them. So it's never in balance. So you are either paying too much, or then you are being a really shitty employer to your employees, or then your customers won't be happy. So one of those three will happen almost every time. So that's why it might be a good idea to outsource it. So costs is one, then customer experience is one, being able to provide faster response times. For example, if we do online chat, we are able to respond within 10 seconds almost always. And I think not many are able to do it in-house. And then also, we are not just an outsourcing company. We are also a professional company, so that we are interested in developing the customer service or making it better than what it is today, and developing the customer experience, enhancing it all the time. So we are not we are both giving the resources to do it, but also the plan, what should be done next, and how does it work, and yeah. So those are the main reasons, and it's difficult. It's a lot of trouble, and if you think about all the costs of having in-house customer service, then you have to also count not just the payrolls, but also you have to pay for the office expenses and all the like tools they need to use. Recruitment is really expensive, and it's also customer service. It's not the highest paid field in the market, so many people are, for example, doing it aside their studies and then probably moving to something else when they graduate and so on. So you have to be recruiting and training a lot of people, most likely. Not the case always, but those are the kind of reasons that why many people many companies want to outsource.
Any other questions? Yeah, I mean, I can probably ask something, Ila. Like I said, I have a list of questions. Maybe I put it this way, though. So if there's a student who would like to, let's say, apply for a job, for whom, are there a specific set of skills that you would look into for those people who are actually trying to get a job from your company at the moment?
Ah, that's a good one. Of course, it depends a lot on the role that they are applying for. So of course, different roles have different skill sets and different goals. But for example, the customer service roles, that would probably be most likely the next recruitments that we will be having open. Well, you have to be excellent communicator, of course. You have to, and if you look at our company values, you have to be a team player. You have to work well as a part of a team. You have to be always willing to help, whether it's a customer or a colleague or anyone. You have to be able to or willing to help at all times. You have to be responsible. You have to be accountable. So if you promise to do something, we really, for in our culture, it's really important that you do it what you have promised. Or well, of course, not everything succeeds every time, and that's totally fine. But you have to be honest about it. So I think honesty, accountability. Then of course, with customer service roles, service mindset is really important, so that you actually want to provide excellent customer service. You want to provide excellent customer experience for the customer, even though in many cases they might not be happy and they might be really angry at you for something you haven't done, but someone else has done, and you have to take that to your face. Or well, not face, because we don't do it face to face, but you have to sink that in and still be willing to help. So those are the kinds of skills that are needed.
Yeah, maybe a follow-up question to this. I mean, in a way that you mentioned that it might be some days that you know, even though you try your best and you don't always succeed. So have you had any major or any smaller challenges you faced maybe early in your career or at later stages that you can remember, and how did you overcome those challenges?
Oh boy, a lot. I don't know where to. So many that it's really hard to begin with. And I have a saying for myself that when you, well, a mistake is always a gift, because it's an opportunity to learn and improve. So if you're actually back in a child when I was playing floorball competitively, and I went to a higher league than I had been before, and I was really anxious, and I was almost scared when I was playing the first games, and I was shaking there on the field, and then I just remember this discussion with my dad when he told me that Ilya, you have to understand that if you're not going to make any mistakes, you're not going to do anything at all in the field. So that in order, if you want to do something or get anything done, you will be making mistakes no matter what, and that's something that you just have to
accept.
Yeah. Yes. So. It's not biggie, and not, no one has ever achieved anything without making ton of mistakes. I had an internal keynote in the beginning of this year in our company to all our employees, and I kind of launched a competition that I think the people who will make the most mistakes during this year will probably be the person who will get the most done this year. So it's not something to be scared of. It's something to learn from. But I also try to you have to try and learn from. I say that if you are doing the same mistake again, then it's okay. But if you're doing it for the third time, then you're stupid. then you need to learn your lesson. It's okay to do a mistake. It's even okay to repeat the same mistake. But from the second time you do the same mistake, you should probably start learning. And it's a huge opportunity always to learn. For me, some mistakes that I have been doing is some of the biggest ones are or what I've been repeating a lot are those feedback situations, for example, that I talked about earlier, that I haven't been able to give an honest feedback or tell what I really think or what is true early enough, because I've been too scared that I'm going to hurt someone's feelings, and then the result has been a lot worse because I didn't do it. And I think actually that's the main mistake that I've been doing a lot, and I know that many others also do a lot, is that when you have that anxious task or there's something you have to do that really is kind of draining your energy, and you just like to move it forward always when the possibility is. And I think you don't have to be in work life. You have in studies and personal life for sure those situations where you know that you have to do something, but it's really something, it's something big, hairy, and audacious. You don't want to touch it. You just want to move it forward and kind of hope that probably it goes away and you wouldn't have to do it. But that's That's something like the more anxious you are about doing something that you know that has to be done, the earlier you have to do it. So do that immediately if possible. That makes your life so much easier. It's because the thing is that at least in my head, those kind of tasks are living in my head, and they are not paying rent. They are totally not paying rent for their staying, and they are taking huge amount of my focus and my energy and pushing me down all the time, because I know that I have to do them and face them at some point, but I'm just moving forward and trying to skip it. So that's something that I've been repeating a lot, and I'm constantly fighting, trying to get better at. So the more anxious you are about something, the sooner you should be doing it. That's probably.
Yeah, a good answer. And like you said, it's not too easy to answer to, but I think the main point is that there eventually will be situations where you probably feel a bit uncomfortable, and you just have to face them. Yeah. And you kind of maybe learn as you do as well, because I think at your current position as a CEO, you are facing these challenges, if not daily, but I would say quite regularly. So it's a matter of how you kind of, you know, taking care of them and how you deal with them, and you just learn on the go.
I'm the kind of person that I really enjoy optimizing, and like you know, when you get things done like or that they fit perfectly, that you're able to, whether it's about like timing different activities for your weekend or at something at work, I really enjoy when I get things optimized really, really, really well. But when you need to make decisions or important decisions, you are not able to optimize them, because they are not that simple. They are in most cases they are complex, and the more complex they get, the more like incomplete or imperfect decisions you have to make. And that's something that at least drains me a lot to make those decisions that I'm not sure if that decision is perfect or not. Is it the optimal thing to do or not? I can't know, but I still have to make the decision, because the worst thing would be not to do anything. So you have to. Most cases, poor decision is better than no decision at all. So yeah.
So basically, when making those decisions, you have to maybe give up something you have originally planned.
Yeah, and you have to accept that you can't. There is no in. There are really seldom those kinds of situations where it's a win-win-win to like all parties involved. There is a saying that when you bow to someone, then you're bullista to someone else. So when you bow to someone, you're showing your ass to the others on the other side, and that's really often the case when it goes to leading a business or leading people. So that if you want to be nice to someone at the same time, whether you want it or not, you're being an ass to someone else, and that's not something you want to do. But sometimes you just have to do it, because if you don't do it, you are going to end up being ass to everyone, and that's not good.
Yeah, we still have some time left. I saw that many students, they actually raised their hand when you asked about the entrepreneurship opportunities. So, and I think you mentioned in your presentation that you had nothing to lose when you kind of steered towards the entrepreneurship. But was there any other reason that make you do that decision and go towards that route into entrepreneurship?
For me, the most important factor was that I thought that choosing this path would make me learn as much as possible. So that was my number one priority. I had a situation where I could have continued studying full time, go to the exchange and do the master's on schedule and so on. Then I had a couple of other working opportunities in front of me, and then I had this business idea that I could participate in and go to co-found a company, and I think that the main major factor that ended, why I chose the last one was that I thought that this is going to teach me the most. I'm going to learn the most from this path. No matter what happens, no matter how well it goes, no matter where it ends, I think I'm going to learn a ton. And I think, especially in the early career, and especially during the studies and so on, you should maximize learning at all points. You are, because if you're able to learn stuff, learning and getting to know people, those two things are that are the two things that will pay you later. Like you might, for example, when you're looking for an internship positions, I know that it's really eager, it's really nice when there's like some companies offering, let's say, 1,500 euros a month for their paid internship. At least that used to be a nice internship payroll during my days 10 years ago. I don't know if what's the situation is nowadays, but that was something that those companies got a really high amount of applicants always to their internships. And I absolutely agree that internships should be paid, but the more the company is paying you for the internship, the more they need to get value out of you during the internship, which also means that that they have to be sure that you pay your bill, which means that you might not be able to get so much freedom, you might not able to get to do so many different tasks, you might need to be doing some really repetitive tasks there, because they need to get your bills paid in a way. So I know it's not simple, but that's something I would really keep in mind when looking for internship positions or the like first job positions in your own field, is that where you get to do the most and where you get to learn the most, because that's something that will pay you later a lot more.
Yeah, I probably have one question for you left, and I think this is something I usually ask from every visitor. Obviously, we are at the Introduction to Corporate Communication course. So what is your recommendation? Why should a student choose us as a major or study corporate communication as a minor study? Mm. Why would you recommend to do that?
Yeah, I think I kind of already answered in the end of my presentation, but I think communications and understanding how it works between different parties, whether it's organizations, whether it's humans, whether it's human and AI or whatever, I think it's one of the key or the most important skills in the future work life, and it already is, but I think the role of it will be even bigger in the future, and it's growing all the time, and it gives you excellent possibilities to work anywhere, and there a workplace where you wouldn't benefit from communication knowledge doesn't exist. So it gives you excellent skills, excellent generalist skills to be able to work on a really wide variety of different kinds of roles and organizations.
Okay, thank you, Ilja. And I mean, we can thank you for the presentation. Give you a big applause. And if you have any questions, you can now also come to the front and ask from Ilja or from me if you have any. But other than that, the official program ends here. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you. It was a pleasure. And I'll be here for 15 minutes or so. If someone has anything, please come and talk.